Call to order the July 29th meeting of the Ponce Inlet Planning Board. Please rise so we can recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we get a roll call?
Mr. Obeck?
Present.
Mr. Young?
Here.
Mr. Reback?
Here.
Mr. Cannon is absent. Mr. Carney?
Here.
Ms. Vanderby?
Here.
And we have a quorum of 5 members.
Thank you. Okay, so our first item on the agenda was pushed from last month is the election of a new chair for this committee. As vice chair, I had the plan to go to Mr. Joe Cannon because he did a very good job of recommending our last chair. But he's not here, so my next idea would be to make him the chair as punishment for not being here. But I don't think we want to do that. He served us for quite a long time and put in a lot of time, so I would like to open to anyone on the board who has a suggestion, would like to volunteer or recommend another member to take over the empty slot of chair of this board.
If I may, I would like to nominate John Carney for chair.
You don't like me very much.
Do I hear a second?
I would second it.
Can we get a roll call vote for that, please?
Mr. Obeck?
Yes.
Mr. Reback?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Mr. Carney?
Yes.
Ms. Vanderby?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Okay, so now that we've done that, we have another vacancy to fill, and that's for the vice chair. So, again, does anyone have a suggestion for a new vice chair or like to volunteer to take that position?
Have you ever chaired a vice chair in this committee?
No, but no, thank you. I have too much on my plate.
I'll go ahead and nominate Mike Reback for vice chair of the committee, or the council, rather.
I'll second that. Could we get a roll call vote on that nomination, please?
Mr. Young?
Yes.
And Mr. Carney?
Yes.
Mr. Obeck?
Yes.
Mr. Reback?
Yes.
And Ms. Vanderby?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda. So does anyone have a correction or addition to the agenda the way it stands? No. Oh, okay. Next is approval of meeting minutes. So we have the June 24th, 2025, and the June...
I'm sorry.
Oh.
I would move to approve the agenda.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Meeting minutes, we have 2 items to go through, the regular June 24 meeting and the later June 24 special planning board meeting. Does anyone have comments on those before we hear a motion to approve?
I just, there was one typo in the minutes of the 24th. Mr. Young, it says chair after his name. So that just should be removed. Line 12 of the June 24th morning or early afternoon meeting.
Any other comments on the agenda or on the minutes? Okay, can we get a motion to approve those minutes with that one correction?
Move that the minutes as published or and edited are approved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that motion passes. The minutes are approved with one modification. Brings us to item five, report of staff.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to point out that the Florida chapter of American Planning Association is having our annual conference in Daytona this year. So I'd like to strongly suggest and highly recommend that board members attend the planning officials training on Tuesday, September 16th. Two of the instructors are fellows of the American Institute of Certified Planners. Those are people chosen by their peers for making significant contributions to the profession. There's also a land use attorney that'll be making a presentation, so they're all experts in their field. As mentioned, it's in Daytona, so it's very convenient. It's at the Ocean Center. The last time the conference was in Daytona was 2017, and it was kind of shortened because of hurricanes that year. Next year, the conference is in Miami. This is provided to the members at no cost, and the lunch is free. And registration ends on August 15th, and we'll have Patty resend the email out about that again for you guys.
Thank you.
Also, sand placement project update. As of last Friday, the North Sand Placement Project began in early June at Sun Globe Pier in Daytona Beach Shores and is currently working its way south. Contractors currently utilizing 15 trucks and averaging 1,000 linear feet of dune construction per week. The project has now been placed over 1 mile of sand. The Amelia Beach ramp is open, and beach driving from Sun Globe Pier to that beach ramp has been restored. As of last Friday, the contractors completed construction near 4031 South Atlantic Avenue in Daytona Beach Shores, and will continue south next week. Planting of sea oats has begun, is not far behind that sand placement. The Army Corps of Engineers contractor is currently constructing its 5,000 linear foot section of sand stockpile along the beach and Ponce Inlet. This is the sand that is being hauled and placed by the county. The contractor is expecting to work in this location until the end of the month and then relocate approximately 1,000 feet south down the beach. And that's all I have, sir.
Thank you. Is there any projection at that 1,000 feet a week rate of when the project will be complete?
When I talked to Jessica Fentress 3 months ago or so, she said everything's probably approximately about a year out. So another good 9-10 months.
Thank you. Okay, so with that brings us to hearing of cases. The first one is application SPEC 6-2025, minor special exception for 4884 Front Street.
Thank you. As you all are aware, this was continued from the last planning board meeting, so I will give you a brief PowerPoint presentation for where we are right now. When I can get the thing on. Was working earlier. Thank you. The applicant, Vernon Kuftick, requests approval of a minor special exception for a sightseeing boat base at Sela Boat Works Marina at 4884 Front Street. If approved, the applicant intends to use the existing dock and boat slip facilities at the property. Here's your aerial of your subject parcel for where the boat would be launching. The marina property is approximately 4.3 acres in size, and the Downley Hatch restaurant is located on an adjacent parcel and is under the same ownership as the marina. There's your zoning map and your future land use map of the area. The P2 district allows a variety of water-dependent and water-enhanced uses. Sightseeing boat bases not to exceed 50 passenger capacity require a minor special exception approval in the B2 zoning district. Here's a couple of pictures of the boat. Beautiful boat is called the Arabella. So the issue last meeting was parking. Since the agenda went out for this meeting, and based on discussions with the property owner, the parking for the sightseeing tours has been shifted to the vacant lot on the south side of Beach Street and east side of Front Street. The parking lot has approximately 30 parking spaces and can accommodate the 19 required parking spaces for the boat base. And you'll see this to the right was the original parking location, and we discussed with the property owner, who is here in the audience tonight, that it will be move to the location near down the hatch. Again, the original and the alternate parking location. And I'm sure you're aware this is what that looks like. Hasn't changed much in 3 years. So we have four specific criteria. They have all been met. I went through them in depth last time, so if there's any of these criteria you want to stop at and discuss, just let me know. Has direct access to the water 4 feet below the mean sea level. All outside storage areas are screened. Shall be separated from any established residential use. And shall not be less than 200 square feet and not exceed 2,000 square feet in floor area. So it does meet all those criteria for the sightseeing boat base operations. In our general criteria for development applications, we have 8 criteria. Those have all been met as well. And again, if you want me to stop at any certain one you want to discuss, just let me know. That's consistency with your comp plan. Impact on surrounding area, that has been met. Impact on evacuation times, no issues. Compliance with consistency and concurrency standards, consistent with prior approvals, compliance with use and development standards it meets as well, all other applicable regulations, and meets the minimizes adverse physical impacts. So the original 6 conditions that were read last time still remain, but you'll notice that in your agenda you had 2 additional conditions. Those were based on it being in that original parking area. And that was after the agenda went out. So staff recommends approval with the 6 original conditions and removing those 2 new ones. And you have the applicant in the audience and the property owner. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. O'Leary. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, first of all, I think we heard some concerns from the community about the plan from last time. So we appreciate, I think, as a board, that the applicant was willing to try to address those and try to be a good neighbor. So I think everybody appreciates that. And with that, I'll open it up to the board for any further comments or questions on this issue.
I was just going to say thank you to the parties that got together and figured this out, because this really, especially in a small town, this is how it should be. So thank you for taking the time. I know that you were under some business stress about that too, so appreciate that.
Any
Would anyone from the community like to make a comment? If you would, please come to the podium and give us your name and address. All right. Can we get a motion on this issue?
I move that the minor special exception SPEC 6-2025 be approved.
I guess I would just want to clarify to that motion that it's talking about moving the parking spots to the new location and removing those two other conditions. So with that, I would second it.
Thank you. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Obeg?
Yes.
Mr. Reback?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Mr. Carney?
Yes.
And Ms. Vanderbeek?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. So with that, we move to item A on the agenda, amending Articles 3 and 10 of the Land Use Development Code related to rental registrations and inspections.
Yes, thank you, Chair. On April 5th of last year, a code enforcement case was initiated against the owners of a single-family residential property for operating a rental dwelling without the required permit. During the town council meeting held on April 18th, 2024, one of those owners expressed his concerns regarding the town's rental policies, specifically addressing the fee structure for long-term versus short-term rentals. On May 31st, 2024, the owners were issued a code enforcement notice of violation with a compliance deadline of June 14, 2024. Prior to the code enforcement board meeting on July 22nd, same year, written objections and legal arguments challenging the notice violation were submitted by the property owners, citing potential preemption in Chapter 83, Part 2 of the Florida statutes, which relates to landlord-tenant relationship and residential tenancies. The town's code enforcement attorney determined that the issues raised warranted further legal clarification. The town subsequently suspended its rental permit program for long-term rentals pending the identification of a suitable resolution. On August 22nd last year, the town council authorized the town attorney to request a legal opinion from the Florida Attorney General regarding the issue. In January 2025, the town received a response from the state attorney general declining to provide a formal opinion on this matter. Town council directed the town attorney to move forward with suggested code amendments pursuant to town attorney Smith's memo at the regularly scheduled meeting on May 15, 2025. Amendments are also proposed for the code of ordinances for council's approval too, but before you tonight are the land use development code articles that will be amended. And with that, staff recommends approval of the amendments to Articles 3 and 10 of the Land Use Development Code.
Thank you. So I guess to initiate the discussions here, there's a memo, attachment 3, a memorandum, and the last sentence of that is discussing some legal questions surrounding this whole topic. And so I would like the representative from the town attorney's office to read that statement and also explain kind of what the thinking of the attorney's office is regarding that. It's on item attachment 3.
Yeah.
It starts with ultimately, though, unless the language is eventually refined. Yeah. Right. Line numbers.
Okay, so you want, what was the question?
Just read that statement and just please explain the background on that.
So for the conclusion paragraph, it says, ultimately, though, unless the language is eventually refined by the legislature or until there is a judicial determination as to the extent of the preemption, this remains unsettled legal territory. And so really what Drew was getting at, Mr. Smith was getting at, is that because we didn't receive any guidance from the Attorney General's office, this is our attempt to change the code in conformance with state law to the best of our ability without any sort of, you know, guiding light, because we can interpret it in different ways, but ultimately that's just our opinion, and unless we want to be a matter of first impression in front of a court, which is never something that we would recommend. We just always want to err on the side of caution. So until we get any sort of interpretation, either from the legislature, I mean, they go back and interpret it based on issues that may have come up or various interpretations every year. So until we get one of those or this goes to a court, this is what we recommend.
And, but even with this, it sounds like there's risk here because of the fact that the court hasn't really weighed in on it yet. You went and asked the Attorney General, they declined to weigh in on it. And so this is an opinion, legal opinion, but this still might be taken to court, correct?
Sure.
And if it was taken to court, then what would happen? Your office would represent Ponce Inlet? Mm-hmm. And who would pay that bill?
Ponce would.
Right, so...
And I can say this for a few matters that I've worked on for Ponce Inlet, for other clients as well. We never give a recommendation that we were not prepared to back up in court. That's always the recommendation that comes out of our firm.
Well, sure, you'll back it up in court at our expense, but that's a gamble maybe the citizens of Ponce Inlet don't want to take, that your office would want to take. And so I think that was the point that I wanted to make here. Thank you. So with that, I mean, that's kind of my bottom line concern with this entire package. We can go through line by line everyone else's concerns if people have other issues that they see with this. We can let the other members speak.
Anyway. It just seemed to me that with the vague language in the state statute, they're leaving it up to local municipalities to interpret that statute in a way that is consistent with the desire of the town management and council, in our case, town council. But obviously, anyone that has a desire or determines that, wait, this is a problem for me, can obviously bring forward some litigation. Because of the ambiguity that exists.
Sure, sure. But I mean, they would have to prove some sort of harm that's
right.
Not of it. So, we'd have to see how that plays out. But there's always options as far as trying to fix it before it gets, there's a judicial opinion rendered depending on whether the plaintiff has grounds and can show damages, depending on the strength of the suit, in our opinion. But that's correct. You're correct.
Do we know whether or not the legislature has this on their plate at all?
I don't, actually, for the upcoming. We just were kind of grappling with what was just passed and implemented at the moment. But that's something that I can certainly look into and keep an eye on.
Okay.
I have a question on the letter from January 9th from the Attorney General's office to the town attorneys. They declined to answer his question 2 and 3, but I was just curious for the third question. They asked for a submittal of the supplement to the memorandum, the long-term versus short-term, and I was just curious kind of where that ended up, or was that done, or just how did that work?
I'm not sure. Do you know whether the third question? Yeah, they said they needed a supplemental memorandum. Generally, we would go to the town to
I don't believe we did that, no.
Yeah, to get approval for that. So there's hasn't been any approval that I'm aware of at this time.
Asked a question, the Attorney General offered to answer it, and then the town declined to submit the requested things to get the answer to the question that they asked. That doesn't make any sense.
No, basically, they declined to answer
after you gave them the
first two.
No, but the third one, they said they would answer, but you just have to, you have to do some things before they'll answer. And you're saying that you didn't do those things, and so they didn't answer the third question either?
I'm not sure if it's still being discussed internally.
Well, they said you had 30 days, so that's windows closed a long time ago. So it shouldn't be being discussed. Or at least we should know if Fontenelle answered.
I think after discussions with Drew, that it was determined that, yeah, it wasn't necessary to do that.
Okay. Are there other board member questions?
I guess what happens if we don't take up this or deny it or say vote it down? What actually takes place? Right now, there's a hold on something, right?
Right, on the long-term rental program, correct.
So that hold would continue?
Correct.
So I guess I'll pick this up at the beginning then, if there aren't any other questions. Or Mark, did you want to say something?
Just a question then, Darren. So what does the town project would be the impact of not having a long-term rental, you know, clarification?
Top of my head, it's probably around $170,000 in impact.
So that would be at risk?
Yes.
Not a small amount of money.
No, it's not.
Well, it's offset to a degree, though, because if you don't carry out the program, you don't have the expense either of doing the inspections, right? So there's both sides of that equation.
But I would probably assume that the revenue, the net, would be substantial.
So if we go to the background section of the memo that you were talking about, Mr. Lear, there are a bunch of statements in here. On line 59, it gets into sort of the reason that the rental policy was started to begin with, and it concludes with, ensure that Ponce Inlet will not become a rental community characterized by high turnover in residential areas. And I guess I have a hard time connecting the dots between that statement and what's being proposed to be done now with the rental policy, which is make it basically a rental inspection policy. I don't understand how inspecting rental homes has any impact on the turnover rate in residential areas.
Well, that was if you have no long-term rental rules and standards to go by, which it requires you be there over 28 days. So if you don't have that, then that's where you're going to get a lot of turnover.
Policy has nothing to do with that.
That was the gist of the whole thing of why to adopt these policies to begin with.
But that exists then with or without this inspection that has been already addressed separately, correct?
I guess I'm not following your question, what you're saying.
I mean, this is put in here because it's supposed to be relevant for the discussion we're having today, which is what should this rental policy look like for the town? And now it's really just an inspection policy. The town's going to collect a fee and do an inspection is where we are. But the impetus for doing any kind of rental policy was to really impact how rental market in Pond Sentinel was operating and trying to not have high turnover in residential areas. That was the goal.
But well, this, and as stated, it is the background, so it's providing a background of why this came
about. Establishing that that doesn't, that goal, which was the initial impetus to this, isn't impacted by whether or not you inspect rental properties.
I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on this one.
Well, explain just it. I'm here. I listen.
We're just providing a background discussion for the whole
that's fine, but
item.
How do you disagree with the statement that it doesn't impact doing rental inspections doesn't impact the rate of turnover of rental units in the community? So I'm just saying that.
But what I'm saying is that this is providing a background for the whole policy.
Okay, fair enough. On the next paragraph, there's a statement about short-term units. They agree to periodic inspections to ensure compliance with minimum housing and safety standards. But then later on, we talk about inspecting long-term inspections as well. So is that misstated or out of date, or only short-term rentals inspected? I don't understand the statement there. That's line 65.
It would be long-term too.
So it should have. This is just misstated.
So, John, you're suggesting that in that paragraph where it states about the inspections that it should include short-term and long-term rentals?
That's what Mr. Lear stated, yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So if we move on to Attachment 3, the memorandum to Town Council from Drew Smith, Assistant Town Manager. I mean, you really kind of get into starting, in my opinion, to start splitting some hairs on what the law, new law says, and how we are going to tiptoe between the raindrops and not violate that law. And the first thing is that we're going to only deal with inspections. And so rental property program is really just a maintenance program. It's not doing anything else but looking at maintenance. And so from what I could find, there are two pieces of maintenance, and one of them is the outside of the house, which kind of everybody's subjected to because everybody's neighbor can see what the outside of their house looks like, and you can, file a complaint to code enforcement if they don't cut their grass, et cetera. So that doesn't really change between rental and non-rental units. But the other piece of it is the international code on property maintenance, which is the internal piece, and this basically states that this program does not impose any specific additional maintenance requirements on rental property that would not be equally applicable to non-rental property. It simply creates a program of inspection of the rental properties to ensure compliance. So that statement, I would say, is, I guess I'll ask you to explain to me how is that rule, that international standard on property maintenance, how is that applied to homes that aren't rented?
Everyone has to abide by those, the ICC rules. That's been adopted by the town. So that's like property maintenance issues, whether your grass is too high or you've got
holes
in your roof.
That's actually handled separately in the code because there's a section that's in the town code about external maintenance. And so
but it doesn't go in depth like the ICC does.
Right. And so anything that's outside, like I said, you could enforce that. But majority of that's going to be this interior inspection. So you might have one set of rules on the books, but you have two sets of enforcement going on for normal owner-occupied properties versus rental properties. And so you've kind of created two classes of citizens, and I think that creates more risk, and it also just creates more problems because you're claiming that we just have all these rules and we treat everybody the same, but we're not really doing that, in my opinion. Next thing, if you get down to overview of the issue, there's a statement in there that just restates what the new law is. And really, it gets into regulation of residential tenancies, landlord-tenant relationship, and all other matters. And so the Drew Smith and the legal people have kind of decided, well, if we only deal with the landlord piece of this, we're not getting into the landlord-tenant relationship, so therefore we're clean. And, I mean, you could argue that, but I think you have to also argue that there isn't a tenant-landlord. There's not a landlord without a tenant, and so you can't really have that. It's just like if the state tells you, well, you can't regulate marriages, Ponce Inlet, and then you come out with code that says all husbands have to do this. Well, that husband being told to do that is a result of him being in a marriage, which you can't regulate. And so it's the same thing here. If I'm trying to lease a piece of property and I've got a tenant that wants to rent it, I can't go through with that contract until I get permission from the town. So by definition, the town is between the landlord and the tenant. And so I just don't see how we cleanly can say we're not going to have legal issues with this law, with the approach that's being taken or recommended by the Ponce Inlet legal counsel. I just disagree with their opinion on that.
If I may on that point, I mean, I disagree, John. I just don't, I don't think the town is getting involved at all with getting in between the landlord and the tenant. The landlord has a responsibility to file a permit to lease their property, right? A permit to us. They don't have a tenant until they satisfied that requirement. So they don't have a tenant until they've satisfied that requirement.
Well, that's if you follow the town's rules, they might have a tenant before that.
No, how can they have a tenant if they haven't satisfied the rental requirements
exactly.
to allow that?
That's my exact point.
A legal tenant.
A legal
That's
tenant.
My exact point. You're but, in the middle. If the town is in the middle.
They are not.
The landlord
John,
and the tenant.
John, they are not.
Okay.
They are not in the middle. Because there is no legal tenant yet. There's no legal tenant until the town has approved that landlord to lease that property. This is exactly what I think the town wants, is to not get involved between, have any interaction with the tenant. Their responsibility is to enforce all the ordinances that apply to the landlord. They're not going to go to that property and say, oh, tenant, you have to cut the grass.
Okay, well, we disagree. I appreciate your thoughts. Next thing, the paragraph on the next page starts with in 2024, the respondent in code enforcement, and it gets into some interpretations by the legal counsel about the Attorney General's motive for not wanting to make an opinion here. I don't think that's super relevant, but it's still at the end of that paragraph. Again, it says the result is questions still linger regarding this application of state's preemption language to rental registration and inspection programs. And so I don't think it's my job to prove that it definitely violates it, but I don't think it's in the town's interest to spend money to litigate this to figure out whether it does or doesn't. When I'm just not seeing enough benefit. If the benefit is only financial, then let's create a tax and go tax rental units directly and not get in the middle of this inspection stuff, which might get us dragged into court. I don't understand. If we want to do a tax, then let's go and collect that revenue a different way. I'm not understanding why we would take on this risk, and the risk is pointed out in the language that came from the town's attorneys. It's not me making up the risk. And a couple of paragraphs down, we get into more conjecture by the attorney. I do not believe the legislature, when adopting this preemption language, had any thoughts about inspection registration programs. They were reacting to local governments that had adopted rent control and similar regulations. And they go on and quote the details here, and there's not any mention in this Section 83425 of Florida statute. There's no mention of rent control, tenant screening, security deposit, rental agreement, application fee. There's a whole bunch of things here. So I don't even understand why the legal counsel would go out and say, I think it was because of rent control. Maybe they heard something, but that's not what's in the statute, so it's not what the law says, so it's not super relevant. And I guess the last thing, and I'll just kind of leave this, is that we've asked the town attorney on a bunch of different topics when I've been in the presence, and the answer is always all of the above. And so if there is any kind of issue, if there's any kind of loss, any kind of accident, any kind of thing like that, where the town of Ponce Inlet could get implicated, then whoever is litigating that is going to probably go after the landlord, and then since Ponce Inlet was involved, is going to come after Ponce Inlet, because Ponce Inlet did the inspection, something happened, you should have caught it during the inspection, you didn't, and now this happened, so now you're on the hook. Whereas if Ponce Inlet didn't do the inspection, and we just let the tenant deal with the landlord in terms of making sure the property was in a condition that would be rentable, then we wouldn't have inserted ourselves in the mix, and we wouldn't be on the hook for those kind of situations, which if we do this, then we're opening another avenue of potential future litigation.
I think, John, in that analysis paragraph, I think the operative sentence is the last one in that first paragraph, right, where all these specific items are landlord-tenant relationship issues. None of the specifically named items have anything to do with property maintenance or inspection, which is exactly what we're trying to do with rental properties, is to oversee those and set guidelines for those. Again, we're not going to get involved in the landlord-tenant relationship. We're just getting involved to ensure that the property remains safe for the tenants and for our community as a whole. That's my view.
But the town doesn't do that for me if I go buy a house. It's my responsibility to go get it inspected and make sure it's suitable to be lived in. So I don't understand why the town takes this special interest in rentals and doesn't take it anyplace else. I mean, I just think it opens the town up to a number of fronts that don't need to be opened up on by stepping into these waters, and I just don't see the benefit. I mean, we've had this thing suspended for a year. I'd like to hear if Mr. Lear can tell us what issues have come up that what issues are we now having with rental properties that we didn't have before, that inspecting before a renter goes in would solve?
I'm sorry. Can you say that question again?
I understand that we've suspended the rental inspection program for about a year, correct?
The program, not just the inspection, everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so have we had issues with rentals that we didn't have when we had it in place that doing inspections would have solved?
I'm not sure if we have any new issues at this point.
Okay, so that's my whole input on this is we're taking some risk that we don't need to take and benefiting financially. If we want to benefit financially, let's find a different way to do that that doesn't require as much risk.
Just to help me understand the risk aspect. Who's going to sue us?
The tenant could sue.
Sue the town?
Sure. You inspected the property. I got injured because of something that you inspected and said was okay, and now we're going to come after you. Or the landlord could come and say, I think you're violating the law, and go see if the court wants to adjudicate that. And somebody will have to do that. I mean, the other thing in here was a statement by the legal counsel that said, well, there's a whole bunch of towns that are doing this kind of thing. Well, that's good. Let them go fight it in court. And then if they win, then let's follow their footsteps and do what, you know, we get some legal precedent for. But I think this town spends enough money on litigation. I don't really want to spend any more tax money on litigation personally, but
I agree with that notion for sure. But going down your thought process, then the options would be no rentals, which I believe we can't do. You have to allow rentals, or just forget inspecting any and all rentals. That doesn't alleviate the possibility of any, either the landlord or the tenant from suing us.
It doesn't alleviate it, but it minimizes it because you haven't inserted yourself between them. You didn't inspect it. You didn't put the Ponsinelli seal of approval on that property before it got leased.
Okay, so your recommendation would be eliminate any inspections?
Right.
Okay. I just feel that for the welfare, I think we need to protect the welfare of the people coming in to this town. And I don't feel that inspections are so onerous.
Well, it may be illegal.
I didn't see anywhere where there's a suggestion that they're illegal.
When you bought your house, did anyone protect you? Or did you, since you had enough money to buy the house?
Yeah, my house was inspected before I moved in.
But you paid for that.
Well, someone paid for it, yes.
It wasn't the town.
Correct.
And so anybody, this isn't a pauper's community. Anybody that's renting here is paying a fairly high amount of money for rent. If they're concerned about the property, they can get it inspected just the same as a buyer can get it inspected. The town doesn't do that service for a buyer, and nor should it. And it shouldn't be doing it for a renter either.
I shouldn't say it this way, but I will. They don't do that service for us, but they do that. They do have that burden on us when we buy a house here. We are essentially mandated to keep it to a certain standard.
Sure.
Yeah.
And renting your house out doesn't relieve you as the owner of that standard.
Correct.
So you still have that standard, and the town still has all the remedies that it has against any homeowner to get the house up to those standards, for sure.
You make some fair points.
So, Darren, bottom line, for me anyway, why have an inspection program in place?
That inspection program is to protect the and public safety and welfare of the public that's coming in and renting these properties. That's what that's for. Just like you have fire inspections for commercial properties yearly. Because you think about this, these are people that probably aren't living here, that are living in town or even near town, that are renting these properties out. That's why you have inspections.
So, John, going back to thinking about this from a, maybe a smaller scale, but I just had two HVAC units installed in my house, and the city did have to come over and give their stamp of approval on those. Yeah. So if those go out, would I be able to sue the city because they approved those being there?
Not if they go out, but...
They start a fire?
I mean, if it didn't meet code, and the code inspector looked at it and said it did meet code, and in fact it didn't, I mean, it's just... I think, yeah, it's possible the town could be sued for that. I mean, we paid the inspector to come, and we trust that... I mean, I had a roof done this year, and I thought the inspector did a good job and kept after the roofing company and got some things cleaned up that weren't done right, and I'm pretty comfortable it is to code, you know, but
yep.
If it wasn't, then if my roof blew off the first time the wind blew, then, I mean, yeah, you'd expect it to be built to code, you know, and you expect them to be qualified to make that judgment.
Yep. So.
And they're supposed to be protecting us from people that are doing the service and make sure that people doing the service...
Chairman, can you speak into the mic?
Yeah, the inspection process is there to protect us, and that's, you know, when there is an upgrade being made or a change being made, that to be sure it does meet code. But that is a double-sided coin. So certainly the town takes on some risk with that, because if the inspector signs off on it, never walked the property, never saw it, and then you have a problem, then the town has a problem, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Are we taking public comments on this?
We will, once we're done.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Any board members have any further comments?
I'm mulling.
Okay, we'll give you a minute. And we can comment again after the public as well. This doesn't mean you speak your piece.
Yeah, I guess my quandary here is that, you know, I had a house, a beach house in New Jersey. And I saw rental property, and the town in general was, middle, upper class, I would say. But I saw rental properties just deteriorate, and it became a major image issue for the town, and the tenants that were there would clamor to town hall saying, what are you going to do about this? This landlord is crazy. You know, he's renting a dilapidated place. This doesn't work. This doesn't work. The town at the time said, hands off, not our problem. Much to, I think, your point. Right? Not our problem. We don't inspect. We don't care what the property is for the tenant, whether or not it's livable for the tenant. And I would say that just in general, again, for public safety and health and well-being of anyone coming into this town, I think inspections are critical.
Well, I would say if the tenant has a problem with the property, I mean, first of all, they get to inspect it before they sign the lease. So if it's not livable, they should never sign that lease. If it becomes unlivable while they're there, then they need to take that up with the landlord. And if the landlord won't solve it, then they need to call code enforcement and then let the town get involved in. But that doesn't require upfront inspection to get that.
I lay odds that the large percentage of people that rent properties here do not visit the property before they come here.
For sure.
They see it online.
Short term, but not long term.
You see the property online, the pictures, oh, they're glowing. Oh my God, it's such in great shape. Oh, a whole new renovated kitchen. And they come and get there, and it's far from that. So, yeah, it may be something that to your point, is a cost to us. But I'll go back to it. I'd rather have us spend that money to ensure that those tenants have an enjoyable stay and a positive image of Ponce Inlet than us forgetting about their care and well-being.
Yeah. Well, I'll go back to the original document that's explaining why the policy was put in place originally on renting, and it really said we really don't want to have a lot of renters here, right? And so if you incentivize something, you're going to get more of it. So if you make the properties wonderful and nobody goes on Zillow and writes, this is a piece of junk, don't come here, are you going to get more renting or less?
I think with the inspections in place, you're getting less. You're obligating the landlord to maintain that property before he even thinks about renting.
That could be, but you also have enough property here that's well-maintained that wouldn't be an issue as well. You could initially limit it some.
I think it could go both ways.
But over time, if everybody knows Ponce Inlet's rentals are the best quality, you're going to get more rentals in Ponce Inlet over time.
Thanks to the inspections.
Right, but that's in diametric opposition to what the policy was invented for, which was to minimize and reduce the number of rentals, not be a town, I forget the terminology, but not be a town characterized by
casual
rentals.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else before we see what the community would like to say? Thank you. So if anyone from the community would like to stand up, please give us your name and address and let us know what you have on your mind.
Okay. I'm Dennis Craig. I'm at 68 Seawinds. All right. Just as way of introduction, I'm the person Darren was referring to as the person that had the violation report. Now, the way he described it makes it sound like I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. So I just want to correct the one thing first, and that is this, okay? I sent in an application, paid my $500. Ponce Inlet cashes my $500. And that wasn't good enough for Ponce Inlet. Ponce Inlet decided that my lease agreement wasn't good enough. They didn't like the way the signatures were. They didn't like terms in the agreement. So they decided to violate me. Never accepted my agreement whatsoever. Came to the violation hearing. Mr. Smith turned around and dismissed it after I told him the real facts of what was going on. And he was more than happy to do that because, you know, he didn't want to have his backside handed to him at the hearing. But I want to make it clear that I paid the $500. Ponce Inlet cashed it. They never accepted my application. And, Darren, I'm still waiting for my $500. Okay? And, no, I have not sued Ponce Inlet for my $500 back. But be that as it may, I'm the one that raised the issue over the preemption issue. Raised it in front of the code enforcement people, raised it in front of the town council. So I guess I was the instigator of the whole thing. Now, if you read the first sentence of the preemption statute, it reads, the regulation of residential tenancies, the landlord-tenant relationship, and all other matters covered under this part are preempted to the state. That's not ambiguous. That's not vague. So if you try to just parse this out and say, well, you know what, if we're doing an inspection, that has nothing to do with the landlord-tenant relationship. Well, kind of follow that through, right? What happens when somebody rents out a long-term rental and doesn't ask for a permit? Right? Is that illegal to do that? What happens if you ask for a permit, code enforcement comes out and does the inspection and says, we want you to do A, B, and C to the property before we let you rent this out? Okay? Well, guess what you're doing at that point? You're regulating tenancies. If you leave it in the way you want to leave it in, what's going to happen is, is Ponce Inlet have the right to say, no, you can't rent your property? If that's not a regulation of a landlord tenancy and a lease, I don't know what is. Okay? So that's, you know, to say that we're going to parse this out and say, well, this really doesn't have anything to do with the landlord-tenant relationship, well, that's just not true. Now, the next point would be, how does this come up? Do we get sued? No, it usually comes in the opposite direction, just like it did for me, and that is this. Somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to do, right? Ponce Inlet does a violation. Now you're in litigation, okay? That's where it comes up. That's where the problem is, right? Not the other way around. The other way it can come around is if somebody like me that has actually standing because I have a long-term rental, I sue Ponce Inlet for declaratory judgment, asking a court to declare that